of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Thursday, the 5th of March, year of our Lord, 2026. Well, Trump is the blockchain president, folks. And I'm not talking about only crypto. We know he loves crypto and he's making a lot of money off of it personally. But he is again blocking supply chains, as he did in the lockdown in 2020, as he did last year with tariffs. He's not 3D chess, he's 3C chess, chaos, conflict, and collapse. The problems in the Strait of Hormuz are leaving the world in dire straits over not just oil, but over all supplies. Trump has assured the shippers that the U.S. Navy would protect the ships, and in what could be seen as him not even having confidence in his pronouncements, he offered to insure the ships just in case the Navy couldn't do it. The Navy has now said there's no escorts available. It puts them in literally a very tight spot to maneuver if they get into the Strait of Hormuz, and it really increases the risk to the lives and the ships of the Navy. Did he ever think about what he was doing with any of this stuff? But, of course, he did think about what he was doing with regulatory capture. We're going to take a look at what's going on with the FDA, regulatory capture, and especially with glyphosate. So let's begin with the dire straits that he's putting the world in now yet again. I mean, whether it's the trade policies or the COVID nonsense that he's doing, this always goes back to locking everything down and creating chaos and collapse. So the biggest shipper, Maersk, out of Denmark, has now halted cargo bookings across the Gulf. And as we said, it's 20% of the world's oil, but there's a lot of other things that are being impacted by this as well. It's not just the stuff that's going into the Middle East, but it's just transiting that area. So they've suspended cargo booking acceptance across much of the Persian Gulf region. An operational update issued on Tuesday, the Danish container shipping company said it's temporarily suspending cargo bookings in and out of the UAE, Oman, Iraq, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, and parts of Saudi Arabia until further notice. They're allowing exceptions for critical food, medicine, and other essential goods, but they're adding that the situation remains, quote, highly volatile. That's a diplomatic way to put it. It's actually hit the fan. The disruption extends far beyond oil. Pharmaceuticals from India are affected. Semiconductors from Asia. Petrochemical products like fertilizer and plastics produced in the Middle East all rely on shipping routes that pass through the region. Cargo ships are now either stuck inside the Persian Gulf or rerouting thousands of miles around Africa, dramatically extending delivery times and, of course, fuel charges. And if this doesn't get cleared up, you're going to see big increases in fuel charges everywhere. This is really causing some major impacts within the global supply chain. Shipping data from Clarkson's Research Institute estimates about 3,200 vessels, roughly 4% of global shipping tonnage, are currently idle inside the Persian Gulf. Great job, Donnie. Epic folly, isn't it? It's I think that's what Gard Goldsmith of Liberty Conspiracy called it. But they're going to see some epic fuel charges as well, I think. Another 500 ships are waiting outside the Gulf near ports off the coast of the UAE and Oman. Even relatively small disruptions can cascade through global logistics networks. The supply chain is kind of like a long train with a lot of cars, said the general manager of CARU Containers. If one car gets derailed, it can very often have a domino effect to many others. So in other words, you know, as I said, he's the president, block the chain, the supply chain. And we saw this happening with the foolish lockdowns that he pushed on everybody in 2020. But this is literally, as he's pointing out, the Trump regime, folks, is literally a train wreck, especially when it comes to supply chains. And it's time for people to get off the Trump train for good, for our own good. Maersk said it was also rerouting some cargo already in transit to temporary storage locations within or near the region to prevent bottlenecks at major ports. Remember how this all got bunched up? And when they finally started opening some things, remember how bunched up everything was in LA and other places trying to handle the backlog of all this stuff? Truly is insane. And he keeps doing it. The man doesn't know anything. Or he is deliberately an agent of chaos. And I kind of lean slightly towards option number two. I think he's pretty stupid, but I think he's also an agent of chaos by design. So for shipments already loaded, but not yet booked, but not yet loaded, the company is urging customers to explore alternative ports or to routes outside the affected ones. Air freight networks are also under pressure because several countries in the region have closed their airspace, forcing airlines to cancel or to reroute flights. Although air freight represents less than 1% of global cargo by volume, it accounts for about 35% of global trade value, because high-value goods like pharmaceuticals, electronics, and perishables rely on fast delivery. So it is a mess any way you slice this thing. The reduced flight capacity is already pushing up costs. And then if they're going to take detour routes, if they're going to go around the tip of Africa, the longer routes are going to add time as well as fuel charges and higher costs. Shipping companies are increasingly avoiding the Middle East altogether. Maersk and other carriers are rerouting vessels around the Cape of Good Hope in southern Africa, a detour that can add 10 to 14 days to shipping times and roughly $1 million in additional fuel costs per voyage. And that's with the current fuel costs. Because if this persists, the fuel costs are going to go up significantly. They already went up significantly in anticipation. But then the Trump administration comes out and says, no problem. First of all, we'll protect you with the Navy. And then if we can't protect you, we'll insure you. Who gets to pay for that? Well, that gets put on the national credit card that all of us will be paying for at some point in time. And then when you have somebody doesn't want to participate with this madness that he's involved in, like Spain, they don't want to join the war. Well, Trump goes back to his, not geopolitics, but his ego politics, and he keeps using this one tool that he seems to think that he's got. You know, he's got one tool, a hammer, right? He's going to hammer people with the tariffs. And so everybody looks like a nail.
And now Spain actually said that we can't use their bases, and that's all right. We could use their base if we want. We could just fly in and use it.
Yeah, just invade Spain next.
To use it, but we don't have to. But they were unfriendly, and so I told them we don't want to. Spain has absolutely nothing that we need other than great people. They have great people.
We have great people, right? As a matter of fact, it was Jeffrey Sachs who was talking about the Trump administration. He said, "What an epic failure this guy is." And he called him, the administration called him a gangster administration, which is what I've been saying. I said, he's a mafia don. That's the only thing he understands, because that's the environment in which he grew up. He grew up in New York City with wheeling and dealing in that center of organized crime at the top of it. Certainly, if you look at the people and the movers and shakers there. But yeah, and then literally in the casino industry, this guy lived in the mafia world, and that's the way he interacts with everybody. The specific situation that's happening is pretty unprecedented, they said. But the industry has been dealing with disruption for years now. Yeah. Since Trump did this stuff, right? The lockdowns, the tariffs, now the war, disruption after disruption after disruption. And I guess there's your 3D chess, right? Do the disruption three times. So, yeah, it's all because of Trump. And, you know, Trump really can't make up his mind. The guy is totally two-faced. I thought this was a pretty good. Somebody did with AI. They replaced. Remember the argument that Zelensky had with Trump in the Oval Office? And what they did was they replaced Zelensky with Donald Trump. so that Trump is arguing with Trump.
You're right now not in a very good position.
Yeah. You're gambling with the lives of millions of people.
Like you're gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III.
For the American people to see what's going on.
So, yeah, what would you say if you could talk to your younger self? Like a year ago or whatever, right? Well, that's where we are right now, the Trump precedence. And insurers are keeping ships away from the Strait of Hormuz. They're not buying Trump's guarantees. Just south of the Strait of Hormuz, marine maps show what looks like a traffic jam, dozens of ships clustered near each other. Beyond the Strait in the Persian Gulf, there's another snarl of maritime collapse. The Strait of Hormuz, which is 20% of the world's oil passes through in natural gas, it is now more dangerous than it has been for decades. It's already affected oil prices and global shipping. Now, they recovered because of the tweets that Trump put out on his Ministry of Truth social. He's making promises. You think about it, he's writing promissory notes that he can't cash. But that was all the market needed. You know, this is the way the markets, that's why I can't be an investor in the stock market. Because it's just, I can't get my mindset into the way these people are. It's such a herd mentality. They hear something and it's like, oh, okay, well, that's good. That'd be good if that's true. So let's all pretend that's going to be true. And they react to that. And then they keep reacting to it for a little while. And then they start to realize, wait a minute, that's not true. And of course, it couldn't be true from the very beginning. And so then they overreact in the opposite direction. The fools all rush in and then the fools all rush out. And that's the way the market flows. And then you add to that a large level of manipulation that is there to fool the fools. So for global shipping, the Strait of Hormuz, the only route out of the Persian Gulf, is as important as the Suez Canal. And the canal's recent problems offer a taste of what's to come. In November 2023, Houthi rebels attacked the Galaxy Leader, a ship traversing the Red Sea, which began a series of attacks. By February 2024, container traffic in the Suez Canal had plunged by 82%. Suez had recently begun to recover, only to be hit now by turbulence from this new war that Trump has put out. Now a similar fate has struck the Strait of Hormuz, right on Iran's doorstep. So again, you have a situation like Suez Canal, when there's violence and people are avoiding it, it takes a while for the stuff to get back. And then when you're talking about the ports that are there, once traffic starts moving, you've got this massive backlog and bottleneck of stuff as well. Meanwhile, you have the Lloyd's has said, the big insurer has said, that they've been told that the U.S. Navy tells industry officials, what industry would that be, shipping and insurance? Tells industry officials there is no availability for naval escorts. Did Trump talk to anybody before he put this stuff out on Truth, Ministry of Truth Social? No. He just makes this stuff up. It's like his reaction to the killings by ICE in Minneapolis and Kristi Noem's reaction to it as well. They don't bother to even look at a video. They don't bother to pick up the phone and say, you know, hey, can we get some escorts out there? Well, Mr. President, if we were to put our ships in the Strait of Hormuz, we would be in dire straits and at great, great risk. We can't do that, Mr. President. That would risk the fleet or whatever, right? He doesn't bother to do that. Instead, he makes this pronouncement. The markets react to it as if that's for real. And now they're finding out that it's not going to be for real. So is the world headed for another energy crisis, asked Kitco. Well, that's a rhetorical question, of course. And when we look at what happened the last time, this has the potential to be much, much bigger than the OPEC oil embargo, as I pointed out many times. You know, the OPEC oil embargo, when that happened, was directed only at the United States because we had supported Israel. It was not directed at Europe or the rest of the world, but only at the United States. And we only imported 19% of our oil. 20% of the oil today goes through the Strait of Hormuz. If you were to shut that down, that'd be 20% of the global supply, not 19% of the U.S. And so it is a potential much, much bigger event. than the OPEC oil embargo, the Trump oil embargo, we should say, or Trump blocking the chain of supply. Meanwhile, Scott Bessent said, don't worry, everything's fine. We got a series of announcements to stabilize oil, and we're going to have 15% tariffs kick in next week. So there you go. Problem solved. Tariffs are the answer to everything. Didn't you know that? Especially if you're a tax and spend Democrat. I imagine Scott Bessent is as well. He gave money to high-profile Democrats in the past. He worked for George Soros. It's funny. You got the Trump administration, as I pointed out yesterday, the very first thing they did was to punish some law firms because they had connections to Soros, or they had a lawyer who, when he was not working at the law firm, but then later went to work for the law firm, had gotten involved in the election disputes on the opposite side of Trump. And so he wants to punish that. I mean, you just have Soros as a client, and he wants to put you out of business. You know, these big law firms with hundreds of lawyers. But if you were Soros's partner in terms of breaking the Bank of England, as Scott Bessent was, that's fine. I'll make you Treasury Secretary. Maybe you can break the Bank of America, not Bank of America, but the Federal Reserve. I hope he does. I'd like to see that go. Of course, there's going to be consequences for that as well. But Trump's 15% global tariff will take effect sometime this week, said Bessent. And just to remind everybody, it was after Trump lost at the Supreme Court, and rightfully so, then he imposed in a tariff tantrum. He imposed a 10% tariff on the world. I'll show them. And then within 24 hours, he bumped it up to 15%. The guy is, as I said, taco. What it really should stand for is top. Trump is always capricious and odious. It's always changing orders. But I think capricious and odious is probably the best way to, you know, to do it. Is somebody please going to impeach this guy or use the 25th Amendment, as crazy as he is? Whatever you do, just get him out, please. But Bessent confirmed that the new rate would be introduced sometime this week and remain in place for 150 days. It's my strong belief, he said, the tariff rates will be back to their old rate within 5 months. Global energy markets, meanwhile, have been highly volatile since the Iran war. Well, what did you expect? With crude oil and natural gas prices rocketing on fears of supply disruptions, the president calmed the oil market down on March 3rd with a phony pronouncement on Ministry of Truth Social again. We're going to escort ships and protect all the ships, and then we'll pay for everything that gets destroyed. And, of course, that part will happen. That'll be added to the exploding debt. Trump said the White House would offer naval escorts and guarantee political risk insurance for commercial oil and gas tankers traveling through the Strait of Hormuz. Now, notice, it still doesn't do anything about all the rest of the products that are backlogged and blocked going through there. It's still going to be incredibly disruptive, not just disruptive, but it's going to be hurting a lot of businesses all up and down the supply chain. It is a train wreck. The Trump train is a train wreck. So again, he can't protect these tankers that are going through the Strait of Hormuz. But he can blow up the deficit again, just like he did with the COVID war, along with the tankers that are going to get blown up. So, again, everything that the man does has been stupid and destructive. When we look at this thing is stopped here. A second. Sorry. Again, Lloyds of London said there are no escorts available. The cavalry is not coming, folks. You're on your own. So the U.S. benchmark, which is West Texas Intermediate, fell by 0.5%. So in other words, not much of a change. People didn't really buy into what he was saying that heavily. As a matter of fact, you look at the international benchmark, which is the Brent crude, that remained unchanged. So Trump's pronouncement, don't worry, we'll protect all the ships and we'll insure you if we fail at that, didn't even move the international market price of oil. People don't believe it. I didn't believe it. Oil prices retreated after news that the U.S. will ensure safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz, they said. 0.5%. Easing fears of a major global supply shock. Market watchers had warned the risk of oil prices reaching $100 were very high if the narrow waterway were closed for an extended period. The precious Dow Jones Industrial, remember that was the response. Why are you giving me so much grief about this pedophile network connected to the same people who gave us this war? Mossad and the CIA. The same people who gave us this war, folks, gave us the Epstein pedophile ring. Think about that. I've seen some pictures. Actually, somebody hung up a sign on a overpass in Boston. Said, war crimes don't excuse pedophile crimes. But understand, both of these things are coming from the same institutions, the Mossad and the CIA. That's what they do. That is their essence. Wars, coups, occultic mind control stuff, and of course coming after children, focusing on them. And so I guess if the Dow Jones Industrial drops below 50,000, can we then investigate this? Well, of course not. She will never investigate this. And she knows where her paycheck is coming from. We're going to take a quick break. And we will be right back. By the way, before we go, I got a couple of comments that Travis has given me here. Conthank, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Says 10 million Mexicans on welfare in exchange for Stephen Miller isn't a fair deal. I don't think that Mexico will go for it. Well, again, do we have to be on one of these two teams or the other? And it really is the welfare magnet. That is the way that this should be approached. And the welfare magnet should not be there even for legal immigrants. It should be there for American citizens either. But let's just start with the immigrants who want to come here with the understanding that you're on your own. You want to talk about the Statue of Liberty and the Ellis Island experience? Well, that's what it was like. Many people came with nothing but the clothes on their back because they wanted freedom, not free stuff. So let's go back to that. That's typical in most countries. I mean, even in third world countries, like Belize, for example, I remember because I was looking at one point in time after the after Ruby Ridge and Waco in quick succession, I thought, well, they're going to kick it off now. Things are going to get really bad pretty quickly. And they slowed the pace down, but they're still heading in the same direction. But anyway, I was of a mind to try to get at least something else outside of the country. Eventually, I decided against it. I'm just too American. I don't fit in anywhere else. But the even if you're going to someplace like Belize, they would require that you have a certain amount of liquid assets, and you have to have an income as well and show that, because they're not going to put you on welfare in Belize. But we just tell everybody in the world, come here, we'll give you a free education. We'll give you free everything. And if you become a citizen or whatever, but you don't even have to become a citizen. You don't have to even have to go through any legal process. Just get in here somehow, and then everything is free. Kuda Bing has gifted 5 subs on Rumble. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. We'll be right back, folks.
Making sense common again. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
APS Radio delivers multiple channels of music right to your mobile device. Get the APS Radio app today and listen wherever you go.
Well, one person not worried about the war, apparently, is War Pete. He is pumped up and excited. I mean, people are dying everywhere. What could be more exciting than that? I just love lethality, right? He is Lethality Maxer. This guy who says that he's a Christian, hates peace. He loves killing. Everything that he does is about killing. And I've seen some people on social media say, I've never, ever seen a Secretary of Defense or Secretary of War that talked so much about killing. And you know, when you look at this, I remember the quote from Robert E. Lee as he looked out over the battlefield. And he said, it's good that war is so horrible, or we've become too fond of it. In other words, there was this pull, you know, of the game, if you will, right? Moving the little soldiers around like you're playing a game, and the strategy game, the chess game of the war, and that aspect of it. But then the reality came home for him. I mean, he was there up close and personal. He wasn't conducting this war from the other side of the world. He saw this stuff up close. We do war at a distance. And Pete Hegseth has been able to distance himself pretty well against this stuff. So the U.S., he says, is winning decisively against Iran and will achieve complete control of airspace within days. Then what? You said your goal is regime change. You can't change the regime from the air. You really can't. And the other aspect of this that is starting to come home is the attrition of ammunition. And as I point out, before this all happened, Dan Kane, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and many others were saying, we don't have enough anti-missile missiles for this that we need. And other aspects of that. And so, in terms of the missile war and things like that, there is essentially a depletion race, an arms race on the other side, I guess, an arms build down as both sides are expending ammunition. And nobody really knows because the fog of war, because nobody knows exactly how many the other side has, and they're not going to tell you what they've got either, truthfully. So nobody knows who's going to run out of missiles or interceptors first, except that we need to have 2 to 3 times the number of interceptors that they have of missiles. And so that is a factor that everybody's looking at. Said, how long is this going to go on? If they're saying that it's going to go for 4 to 5 weeks, now they're saying 8 weeks. As you extend this and run it out, which is the way these things typically go, what that does is start to lower the possibility that you were going to be able to do this in a quick way and win it. Iran's missile capabilities have been drastically diminished in the 4 days of fighting, and the nation's top leadership positions remain vacant, he said. Well, the big advantage that Iran has in all this is that they have spent a very long time in terms of trying to decentralize things. Their missile batteries, for example, operate more or less independently of each other's, whereas we have centralized command and control. Everything that we do is about complexity, and it's about centralization. That does not serve us well when it comes to politics. It really does not serve us well when it comes to war, either. A decapitation strike is much more damaging to us. For example, there's been reports, and we don't have enough time for this before Tony joins us, but reports that one of the attacks that was able to get through took out communications network that was very central to a large region there, central to the operation of these anti-missile systems. And, I've got that footage, actually, Chevkin. Anybody see that footage of a Marine protesting the war, only to have his arm broken by a senator and the police? Yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact, why don't I put that on, and we'll get Tony on in a little bit here.
The reason for this war. America does not want to fight this war for Israel.
Let's go. Come on.
Let's go.
America does not want to send its sons and daughters to war for Israel. Your inability to name that shows you ineptness as leaders.
That's how much they appreciate your service, isn't it? All this stuff with Sean Hannity. Thank you for your service. Yeah, now go fight for Israel.
A reminder to all our
Commandant, please stand up as a Marine and stand up for America. Out. No one wants to fight for Israel.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break here. We're going to get Tony and let Tony talk about this as well as what's going on with the economy and with the war. We'll be right back.
Listening to the David Knight Show. You're listening to the David Knight Show.
Well, not joining us just yet is Tony Arterburn, but he will be joining us, Wise Wolf Gold. And, of course, you can get to him with davidknight.gold and let him know that you came through us. But we're having some problems with audio. We're trying to work out whether it's on his side or our side. But we had Tony set up to go, but we went to talk to him. We couldn't do it. And I think he doesn't know sign language, so we're going to wait until we got audio here. But let's continue talking a little bit about Pete Hegseth. And as I look at this guy, he's looking more and more like some delusional Colonel Kurtz out of Apocalypse Now, or, you know, the original novel Heart of Darkness by Conrad. He is just so into death and destruction. It truly is amazing. More bombers, more fighters are arriving just today, he said. And now complete control of the skies. We'll be using 500-pound, 1,000-pound, 2,000-pound laser-guided precision gravity bombs, of which we have nearly unlimited stockpile. And he said the U.S. had used its more exquisite standoff munitions. Yeah, he's talking about quiet death and how wonderful that is, you know, with the torpedo strike, sinking a ship, and we have quiet death. We're going to rain death and destruction from above. This guy is a true psychopath.
And fixing their leaders and their military leaders. Flying over Tehran, flying over Iran, flying over their capital, flying over the IRGC, Iranian leaders looking up and seeing only U.S. and Israeli air power every minute of every day until we decide it's over. And Iran will be able to do nothing about it. B-2s, B-52s, B-1s, Predator drones, fighters, controlling the skies, picking targets. Death and destruction from the sky all day long.
He likes that.
We're playing for keeps.
Purpose.
Our warfighters have maximum authorities granted personally by the president and yours truly. Our rules of engagement are bold, precise, and designed to unleash American power, not shackle it. This was never meant to be a fair fight, and it is not a fair fight. We are punching them while they're down.
Yeah, we've seen you do that before.
How it should be.
Seen him do that before. Yeah, you punch people when they're down. When you blow up a ship, and you don't have the authority to do that, or the reason, or the morality, or the legality, no authorization for that. You go back and you murder those people, that's punching them when they're down. This guy is, you know, he talks about mission. You know, we're always worried about mission creep and everything. How about creeps on a mission? That's what we're seeing with this guy. He doesn't understand what his mission is. His mission is, that's why he wants to change it to war, right? He doesn't want to defend. A just military would be there to defend the United States from attack and to try to neutralize the attacker if that were to happen. Instead, he sees his mission as creating wars and killing people. And he revels in that. It's disgusting to see him do this. I put on Twitter, I said, where are the people? They have a church plant from Doug Wilson's church in Idaho that has been put in D.C. And it's like, well, you got Pete Hegseth coming there. And this is what you see frequently with celebrities who go to a particular church or whatever. They don't usually get the kind of care and assistance and help that they really need. Everybody defers to them. As a matter of fact, there was a recent convert. I think it was Jelly Roll. I saw his wife who had been a Christian and he was not. And she helped him. And then she was wise enough to say, all these people are looking up to us because we're celebrities. I mean, he's had this horrible life in the past. And she said, you need to understand, we're just baby Christians, right? We don't really have this all worked out. And people are so deferential. It might be to the pastor, or it might be to a celebrity, especially to a celebrity. Or if you're going to go to Washington, D.C., and you got the Secretary of Defense coming to your church, well, that we don't want to drive this guy away. Let's not criticize anything that he does, even when he needs criticism. The wounds of a friend are faithful, right? And so they need to tell him this because this guy is getting so caught up in killing people. That is not following Christ. I got to say that when I see what Pete Hegseth is doing, when I see what Huckabee is doing and these other people, we have to speak out against this and say, that's not us. In the same way that when I see what the federal government is doing, I have to say, that is not us, and that is not the Constitution. These people don't follow Christ or the Bible any more than they follow the Constitution or even their own rules. Pete Hegseth violated the Pentagon's own rules for war. He violated the Geneva Convention, which was put up to try to minimize the brutality of war. So we still don't have Tony yet? Okay, we're real close? Okay. Well, he's getting closer and closer. But meanwhile, he was glorying also about the fact that they sunk a ship with a torpedo. And he says, quiet death. And this guy is a psychopath. What was not quiet was this kind of death, where they're bombing 9 million civilians in Tehran. That's not such quiet death, is it? And what it reminds me of, again, as I said before, they used to be that in countries that were based on Christian morality, we tried to spare civilian life. And that's why they would have the kinds of rules of engagement, and they would wear uniforms and that type of thing. And it was considered to be a war crime if you targeted civilians. And so you would get very harsh punishment, perhaps execution, after the war was ended if you did that type of thing, and rightfully so. Unfortunately, the Germans, the Nazis, decided they would target London. And then we turned around and became the monsters that we fought. We did that to Dresden. And then we did it to Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And probably the destruction in Dresden was worse than the two nuclear bombs. And, of course, the first bomb that they did, Nagasaki, Ground Zero, was the only Christian church in the city. And hardly any Christians in Japan anyway, only about 1%. So let's vaporize them. I think we got Tony Ray to come on now. Tony, are you there?
I am here, sir.
Great. Great to have you on. Thank you. Sorry about the problems that we had. Glad we got that together. What do you make of all this stuff? I mean, looking at the economy, I mean, the stock market has been reassured by Trump saying they're going to protect the ships and then insure them as well. Now, the Navy has said, no, we can't do that. We can't operate in that strait.
Well, these are wars of choice. That's first and foremost.
Yeah.
We don't have to do these things. We do them because war is the health of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And fiat currency is the lifeblood of that unconstitutional, immoral activity
mm-hmm.
of the deep state. And we are inside of the death throes of the military-industrial complex, lurching out as the American empire starts to rapidly decline. One of the headlines that I always seem to find these headlines that should be front page everywhere, but gold surpassed the dollars, the world's reserve asset held by central banks because of the price of gold.
Wow.
Massive gold accumulation by the central banks over the past 3 years, coupled with the price increases, has now surpassed the dollar. And I had to go verify that because it's not on any major network.
No,
anywhere.
They're going to talk about that. As a matter of fact, what we saw was over the weekend, Bitcoin started going up really quickly. I get these notifications on Cash App. It just went up by 5%. Then later that day, it went up by 5% again. So I was seeing it jump, making all these different jumps. And I thought, well, I don't know what gold is doing, but of course the markets are kind of closed over the weekend for the most part. But it did go up significantly at the beginning of the week, and then it started to move back down a little bit, and still up from where it was a week or two ago, but not as much as I thought it would be up. And so I guess the question is, what is going on? What is the mindset of these people? As you pointed out, war is the lifeblood of the state, and the rather the fiat currency. War is the health of the state or whatever, and the currency is the lifeblood. So maybe that's the mentality. That
sure.
War is somehow good for the dollar? I just don't see that because
right.
I don't see the war as good for the empire.
Well, I think in the short term, that's what you're seeing. I think there's a bit of euphoria on war profiteering, defense stocks, activity, money printing. Whenever there's war, which is, I guess, always now, a perpetual war for perpetual peace, if we have that, then there's going to be central bank currency injections, and we're going to continue to do that. That's going to ramp up. So I think some
right.
of the
stock market likes it
when they
print money. The stock market likes that.
Oh, it loves it. It feeds on it. It's not about making profit anymore. It's about creating currency and your proximity to the central bank. So when this kicked off, I think there was over the weekend, you saw gold from low 5,000s to 5,400 at some point,
mm-hmm.
and then it's come back down somewhat. There was some profit taking on Monday.
But this
is short term. What you really need to watch are a couple of things. One, the central bank holdings that's surpassing the dollar, and then the price of crude oil. Price of crude oil jumped up like. It's from 61 at the beginning of February to $77 for a barrel of crude. And I think that's only going to increase.
I think it got up to 85 at some point. I think it's come back.
That's where it is today. Yeah, the futures went up to past 80 and it's down at 77 as of this this morning. I'm just watching that very closely because that's gonna determine a lot here in the next couple of months, and I think all bets are off. It's tough to say exactly what's gonna happen with pricing, but this has never really happened before. We just launch a major war without any real lead up or any real warning. There's no debate. There's no
leadership.
There's no leadership.
He's looking at this stuff and it's like, well, I don't know if we got enough ammunition for this war or not. And I don't really care what happens to the shipping markets when they close off the Strait of Hormuz. They're reacting to this stuff. And it's like, didn't you guys think about this before? Evidently not. And that's why when I looked at it, I'm surprised that gold hasn't gone sky high, because I'm looking at what happened with the OPEC oil embargo. And we all know what that kicked off, this massive inflation, actually stagflation, and gold went through the ceiling with that eventually. But I guess I'm getting ahead of things.
You're thinking too much.
I'm looking at the trend down the line. It's like, okay, I don't see how they're going to – I haven't seen the U.S. Have the wisdom to get in and get out on any of these wars. The kidnapping of Maduro really wasn't a war. And so I don't really know what they're going to do if they want to do regime change. You know, what's that going to look like? And, of course, Venezuela was just the U.S. government's operation. This is Israel. We're doing this for Israel. And they want to eradicate Iran just like they want to eradicate Gaza. So I don't see this as being a short-term thing. And if it goes long-term, it's going to go in the way of the OPEC oil embargo in terms of just the economics of it. And so that's why I'm looking at this and thinking, why aren't people buying gold here? I don't understand.
Well, you can see some of the other corresponding moves that the BRICS nations are making. As a matter of fact, I talked about how significant it was that China is trying and I think succeeding in becoming the world's gold hub. I mean, they're the largest producer of gold and holder of gold on paper. We don't know exactly how much gold they have, but they've got the Shanghai exchange. But more importantly, they're pushing this Hong Kong, not only exchange, but gold holding place to store it as for international hub. And they want to get like 2,000 metric tons over there. They're going for this is the long-term thinking that the Chinese are doing, that others are doing. And we're just, you brought up a great point. There's no leadership. What are, besides fighting, you know, on behalf of Israel, what are we doing?
That's right.
And I don't think there is a plan. I think it's chaos for chaos sake at this point.
I agree.
There is no rhyme or reason. I mean, I think you brought up the fact that, when they just assassinating these Iranian leaders, they're taking out moderates or people that they thought might succeed, right? And that would replace them that they could deal with. They're just killing. Yeah. And, first of all, you got a guy named Pete. I mean, he's just coming out and he's killing people and getting excited about it. It really is truly disgusting.
It is.
As somebody who's served and has served in combat, I can't imagine myself speaking that way.
Yeah.
I know, when you had this like this, especially I would have resigned. I would have never taken people to war over this, but I definitely the hubris here, David, is staggering. And I mean, if you're betting, don't bet on this. Like this is, this is going to end badly. Mm-hmm. History does not bode well for these type of moves. And, it's really sad to watch because, you know, we're being drugged along with it. Yeah. And, kind of the sum of all fears, like stuff that you and I've been talking about for years, and especially your criticism of Trump, all confirmed. Like this is complete, like it, not that it hasn't been vindicated before, but this is so over the top. Like there's no room anymore to try to justify or 4D chess this out or intentions or anything. Like this is clearly the bifurcation point that this separates everything. And it's been happening for a long time. But, I think this was one of the, and you can see it in the realm of influencers and others that are, jumping off this ship, and they don't care, which is probably the tell that something else is afoot, because I don't think the administration or the people in power care about their polling numbers or midterms or anything else. I think we're way beyond that. They've got an agenda in mind, and it doesn't include prosperity for the American people.
That's right. It includes artificial intelligence and a surveillance state, and they have cleared the decks for that. It truly is the agenda that you couldn't do a better job if you were trying to prepare the way for the technocracy and the global governance and the surveillance police state that they've been desiring to have all along. And he's just the guy to do it because he puts so many people to sleep. It's just amazing. The people who should be the ones who are opposing this are so connected to him personally, they don't want to see it. And we still see a lot of that. And of course, when you got somebody like Trump, and he does these things and he gets away with it, and nobody calls him on it and nobody opposes him on it, you have one or two people that will stand up here and there, and then he hammers them down, and then it just creates more fear for the other people to not stand up. And so when that happens, he's obviously going to just get worse over time, which is what we're seeing.
Yeah, it's a feedback loop of narcissism. Mm-hmm. It's an echo chamber, and it's a cult. So you get around it, he gets told what he wants to hear. If not, you're out. So there is no dissent. I don't know why anybody in their right mind would want to be a part of anything that he's doing. if you clearly there's a track record too. It does not go well for you. Now there's the case to be made. You know, the political grifting that's happened. There's lots of money that's been made. Mm-hmm. But that's all short term. I mean, you got to live with the after effects of everything that's happened. And I just think that the U.S., not only foreign policy, but the economic policy is absolutely disastrous. We have no strategy. The strategy is that there is none.
Yeah.
And
right.
Other than chaos.
Kill everybody. Got to kill everybody. And you're talking about this. I don't know. He's been in the military. Did he have any actual combat experience? I didn't look that. I should look that up.
From what I understand, he was in Afghanistan, maybe Iraq. I've looked. This has been over a year since I looked at his background, so I know that he does have some.
He was there, but did he actually have any combat experience? Was he actually in a fight or something?
Right. Well, that's always a question mark, because you can be in country, but you know, literally never leave the base and watch DVDs all day. Sometimes that happens. So you can be in country, kind of, you know, same thing with just because you're in the USO doesn't mean that you were in combat. So if you go, you know, support the troops, but, not to take anything away from what he did, but I find that his language is absolutely unworthy of the Christian heritage that we have in this country.
That's right.
You're talking
about the military heritage either, right? I mean, the role of the military is not to just go out and kill everybody that you can, including civilians, which is what gets him so excited. It's just absolutely insane, but especially not as a Christian, but even the military, that's not their mission to kill everybody.
No. And then can you imagine somebody like Eisenhower?
Yeah.
You know, saying something like this.
No.
I mean, or even MacArthur. I mean, I've read several biographies on Douglas MacArthur, and you talk about probably the greatest general since Napoleon or Alexander the Great. I mean, he happened to be American. That kind of language really never came out of his mouth. I mean, it was, this is something new, and I think is probably indicative of a declining culture, declining empire. And, which makes it so much more dangerous, David, and what bothers me, like when this kicked off, and we knew it was coming eventually, but I just thought, you know, maybe, you know, we would like go back to June of last year. Just by the way, the strike on Iran last year was the anniversary, it was on June 22nd. It was the anniversary of Operation Barbarossa, when the Nazis invaded the Soviet Union. And I wondered why if they didn't look that up, but that was when we had to take out all of their nuclear facilities. But I thought it was even more
troubling.
That didn't
work out too well for the Nazis either, but
right. Well, that's the whole point. Like the blitzkrieg and preventive war or whatever, you know, the first strike never worked out.
Yeah.
It hasn't been like the momentum fades and everything else. And you don't have this just war mentality. It's certainly not a defensive war. So really is, really is, and instead didn't work out for the South either. And then right. here, you know, Lincoln wanted the South to fire the first shots. You know, that's, mm-hmm. it's just always imperative that, for some reason, that's the way that it balances out whenever there's a, first strike. But
that's right. Shelby Foote did a great job in his, history of the Civil War in terms of showing how Lincoln maneuvered that to happen.
Are you talking about Shelby Foote?
Shelby Foote. Yeah. How Lincoln maneuvered the, Fort Sumter thing to happen.
That he did. He goaded him into it. And I think they had like a, it was an old, like a really elderly gentleman fire the first shot. It's just somebody, it was a firebrand, you know. That,
Edmund Ruffin. Yeah.
he had been around. I think he was a supporter of John C. Calhoun. And, you know, that was going on for a while. It was just building underneath the surface. Lincoln wanted him to strike. And so that set the tone. And what's really even more disturbing, you know, I think as time goes on, we'll see. They had a deal, worth. But supposedly they had a deal where Iran would have never been able to obtain a bomb. There would be no stockpiles. You know, and again, I don't know how do you verify that. You could use the UN, you could use the IAEA, all that stuff. But it was close. And how many thousands have died already?
That's, right. That's the other part of this, Tony, is the treachery. We've seen that now multiple times. That is a tactic of Israel, you know, to pull people in negotiations and then sneak attack them when you've got their confidence. And to me, that is a very unproductive way to go. How many times can you pull that on people, right? You pull them in and say, hey, we can work this out. And then you do a rug pull on them and a sneak attack, and you show how treacherous you are with dealing with people. I just don't see I don't see that works out to our long-term advantage.
Well, it certainly doesn't. And I think the good news about any of this is the high watermark for the Israeli influence on our politics and mm-hmm. on our government, the way that they've carried out over the past many decades is waning, declining, and becoming so apparent. They're obviously doing it in the face of people right now, but the right. repetitive a re-election of people based off of this belief system. Matter of fact, one of the other silver linings to the last few days has been Dan Crenshaw in the second congressional district primaried out, which I didn't see come. He's an approved veteran. He's one of the because he really loves war, but he finally, it's hard to do. I mean, you have to really work at it. To lose, like once you've been elected in a primary in a Republican district in East Texas, you've got to really be bad at your job.
Well, he's working at it pretty hard. Yeah.
Yeah. He was that bad.
Yeah.
So, I think that's some of the things that are happening. And I just kind of, I like to study culture and trends. And I see that they reached their high water mark a while ago. And this may be. That may be why they're just at a rush to get it done. Mm-hmm. It may not be about, you know, anything else other than they see the writing on the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, they've got probably the best president they're going to have to help them right now. And Netanyahu has been his entire career has wanted to destroy Iran. So here's his chance to do it. The thing I think is interesting is how when Trump gave us the history of all this stuff, he goes back 47 years and says, for 47 years, they've hated us and they've been chanting death to America and all the rest of the stuff. It's like, well, 73 years ago, you gave them the reason to hate America. And it is the one of the first and one of the prime examples of the folly of American regime change is Iran. And here we are trying to do it again. It's just, it's almost funny, except for the number of people that are being killed. And it is just, it is truly disgusting. And I think people are starting to get disgusted with this. A lot of MAGA people, Karen was looking on her Facebook and there was a poll there and, comments, and there were a lot of people, I voted for this and all this other kind of stuff. Well, you're one of the few people who voted for this because that's not what Trump campaigned on. You know, if you voted for Trump, you were voting for what he said he was going to do. And he said he was going to do just the opposite of this. So I don't know how you can come back and say you voted for this. It's just that you voted for Trump. And that's what we get with Trump.
Yeah, we were lied to. We were deceived. I mean, it's at some level you did it to yourself if you're talking about the second administration. But Yeah, I mean, that was the whole point, right? It was to stop World War III, to get out of these wars, bring the troops home, bring the jobs back. Let's create a stable economy. I mean, none of that was real, right? That's right. This is all on behalf of the neocons, and that the neocons absorbed whatever America First was supposed to be. That consumption is complete at this point. So really sad to watch, but,
Well, and of course, we've seen Charlie Kirk's organization. He came out really strongly against Lindsey Graham and Israel's war with Iran just before he died. Now they're cheering it on. This has been a complete 180 there after he's gone.
That's probably the point.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably he would have been a real problem. Yeah. If the more I've learned about where he was in the last few months of his life, he would have been a real problem. That's right. In this scenario. So there's a darkness that surrounds, I think a real evil that surrounds, this, foreign policy and what we're doing on behalf of Israel. Truly is just, I want to be completely separated from it. I've just said publicly many, I don't support this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get behind this. There's a darkness to it. I think it's bad for your soul.
I agree. I mean, you look at it, it's Mossad and the CIA, the same people gave us the Epstein network, right? So it's like, I don't know. It looks to me like they're kind of staying the course. There are some things in America where people do stick to their principles. And I guess you could say that the CIA and Mossad and these people do stick to their principles.
They're consistent. Operation Epstein Fury is in full effect.
That's right. That's a good way to describe it. Operation Epstein Fury. That's absolutely true. Well, it's been a real chaotic week in gold and silver, I'm sure. What do you see happening here in the future? I mean, things have consolidated. It hasn't been as chaotic, for example, as Bitcoin has been. But what do you see happening? What's going on with silver, by the way? I've been following what gold is doing. I haven't been following silver.
Well, I think prices have somewhat stable. I don't want to use them. Should I use the word stabilized? they've leveled off a little bit, but they still whipsaw violently. So things aren't back to normal as a deal. I don't know if they're ever going back, to the way that they were. I hope they do for the public's sake because, dealing with the movement of metals has become increasingly difficult with prices, but we're doing it. As a matter of fact, we put out a letter yesterday, an email to all the Wolfpack members and just saying, we're doing the best we can. A lot of the, products that used to be available or weeks out, we can't get them or we can't source like fractional silver. Although I did find a place yesterday and did my first deal with them, out of New Hampshire. It's a libertarian minded, liberty minded person who's got a small mint. So we're going to be dealing with them directly, but I put out a letter, an email just saying, we're doing the best we can. We appreciate everybody. We're using fractional 90% silver for a lot of the packages. And we do think that in the long term, 90% constitutional, also known as junk silver, is actually one of the best bets you can make. Although it just got hammered in the last 3 or 4 months because everybody's trying to sell at once.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a premium drop and all that. But I think, just given the fact that we're watching in real time, like the supplanting of the dollar, like de-dollarization is not only real, it's almost complete. With the world reserve holdings surpassing the dollar, again, should have been major headlines. And you mentioned Bitcoin earlier, David. One of the reasons that the price started to head north again is because of the Iranian regime being toppled. I believe their currency was the rial. Is that correct?
I think so. Something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
It's just plummeting. Same thing when we invaded Iraq, but these things weren't available then. I mean, gold, I think when I was part of the Iraq invasion, gold was about $250 an ounce, something like that. Crude oil was about, 50, maybe $40 an ounce, or barrel. So, a lot of price changes since then, but the Iraqi dinar, I saw it go to zero like overnight. People were running out of the banks with boxes of Iraqi dinar with Saddam Hussein's face on them.
So you think maybe people in Iran are taking whatever money they can and They are able to get it into crypto. They can't necessarily get it into gold, right?
Right, because of the movement of it. It's like, right, and you're trying to cross borders. And that's where, you know, if you, that's where Bitcoin, at least in its current form, could be very beneficial because it's borderless. Like you could put everything into a Bitcoin wallet as long as you know your seed phrase. That's completely unhackable, and you could move across borders easily, and then you know, you've still got your, at least somewhat, you've got you retain your value. So I think that'll continue to push Bitcoin, and you know, we had an all-time high of Bitcoin back in October of 2025, and it's cut that in half. But I think there's a lot of accumulation, other things going on. This certainly has been an uptick in Bitcoin holdings and Bitcoin usage. So we'll see about that. Gold and silver, tangible, hard assets are still supreme, in my opinion, through that. But the advantages of being able to have that digitized and walk across a border is also important.
Yeah. And of course, you know, we're talking about shipping. It's not just oil and natural gas, but it's a lot of things that are being impacted by it. And that includes gold and, you know, when they're trying to move that around as well. I saw an article talking about how that had been a hitch for some of the large buyers that couldn't get the gold physically transferred because of the shipping issues that are happening right now.
Yeah, I think a combination of all three of them are very important. I mean, I diversify. That's why we're Wise Wolf Gold, Silver, Bitcoin. I think that in the future, these are three things that keep you outside of the system. If you retain ownership without counterparty risk, very important. I noticed, one of the other things that happened was that Venezuela, their state-owned mining company, just signed a deal to supply the U.S. with 1,000 kilograms of gold for delivery. So interesting, right? There's some things that are happening. You know, we're playing the commodity wars. Matter of fact, the U.S. military is going to some mining companies for rare earth minerals and things that would keep the war effort. We've outsourced so much of this over the past 50 plus years because of free trade.
Yeah, I saw some articles about antimony, a big crush on that to try to get that for, you know, military supplies and things. So.
I remember there was a U.S. senator back in the 90s said, it doesn't matter if you make computer chips or potato chips. We'll just get it, you know. And unfortunately, that's not how the world works. We have to source, especially for national defense. Now, this isn't national defense. This is national aggression or whatever you want to call it. But that's what we're funding and that's what we're supplying. So a lot of the policies that we made in the 80s and 90s are coming home to roost, and they're not. I think they're scrambling at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it is a crazy time. And as they say, you know, the curse, Chinese curse, may live in interesting times. Certainly we live in interesting times, and it is a real juggling act for what you have to do. I don't envy you your job at all, but you've been able to do it. And so congratulations for that. And as you point out, the Wolfpack thing is very integral to that. And it's one way that people can gradually start to get into something that's going to be a little bit more stable for their particular economic situation in a time of great instability and volatility that is going to only increase, I'm afraid. And we've been talking about this. We're getting closer and closer to the fourth turning. They're going to step on the gas. And I think this is, you know, Trump just put us in another, he just shifted it to a higher gear right now. And I think we're going to continue to see this kind of volatility and chaos happening. So that's one thing that people can do to prepare, I think, is gold and silver. It's very important. Thank you so much, Tony, for coming on. Always great talking to you. And again, people can go to davidknight.gold, and I'll take you to Tony, and you can get in touch with them, and they can help you with whatever you need to do.
Appreciate you, David, and we'll see how this looks next week. I try not to make price predictions too often, but things don't look good for the current system. So doing what you can do. And this is why we built my company the way it's designed, is for everyday people. And I just saw, it might be, your audience might be interested. Tucker Carlson just put out an expose on gold companies. It doesn't look good for them. And I'm so glad that I've run my business the way I have, because people have gotten really defrauded and misled, way overpaying for, especially in the gold IRAs and other things. I'm really proud of what we've done. We've made people a lot of money. Wow. So, and instead of them realizing that their savings aren't there, they paid some crazy premium. So, thank you for allowing me to sponsor your show. We're proud to do it, especially in these times. So,
well, I really like what you do. I didn't see that expose. I usually get my Tucker Carlson stuff secondhand. Did he respond to the Cutter thing when he said that, when he was talking about what happened, and the government and Cutter just said, no, that's not true. Did you see that? I talked about that yesterday.
No, I need to get into that. I've had so much going on with just following the supply chains that's taken up, eating up most of my bandwidth.
I bet it is. Yeah, no, he was he had said something about trying to think. I talked about it yesterday. I think it was something about assassination of or something that Israeli agents were doing in Qatar.
Yes,
and they said no, that didn't happen. And so it's kind of interesting. I said. You know, Tucker can, I like his position on a lot of things that he's taking now, but I don't trust him because I don't trust what he did during the pandemic. I don't trust what he did during 9/11 and the aftermath of 9/11. He did a lot to shut down any consideration of what had happened with 9/11. So he's got a long way to go.
Things.
Yeah, he's got a long way to go to earn my trust on these issues. But what was he saying about the gold, different companies? They just price gouging and things like that?
Well, I think he had something that set off a red flag for him. People were, gold companies were approaching him, and one offered him like $20 million.
Wow.
To for a year sponsorship. And he said, how do you make that much money selling commodities? And so, you know, what you find out is that, and I've seen this happen time and time again with people who've contacted me. A lot of the times they have these call centers on these big gold companies and IRAs, and they will put you in, although it is approved IRA metal, but you'll be paying for, you know, MS-70 graded American Eagles that are, you know, rare proof sets, you know, stuff like that. So you increase the price. So say let's say gold's $5,000 an ounce. Well, you might pay an extra, you know, $800 for the privilege of owning that. Well, it starts adding up, you know, to dollar for dollar when you cash it in. It doesn't translate into your savings, because the way that the IRAs go is that the way that they calculate the values, they say this is how many ounces of metals you have.
Yeah, period.
And this is the spot price, period. It doesn't matter about the premiums or the types of coins. That's why I actually get away from the premiums as much as possible. And I say, well, I usually put people in something like Canadian Maple Leaf. So you get 4.9 gold, which is, I mean, not that matters that much, but there's no coinage whatsoever. It's approved for IRAs, and the premiums are generally acceptable. And they're good looking coins, you know, so you can do that. And it's also North American, which has always been my justification. But, these reports that are coming out, and people are, you know, a lot of these, call center gold places, that's what they did. You know, that's how they made money, and they needed some, they had a massive marketing budgets, and I'm as big as I want to be. I think we can serve people big or small and do any type of transaction. And, I can source just about anything, but I don't have any. A lot of the folks that have used me over the years have done really well, because just look at retail and say, I don't think there's another company out there like me either, because we tell people what the competition's selling stuff for. That's usually what I do. That's the first thing I do. So I'm glad that it's probably why, David, it's probably why I'm not Secretary of Defense. Okay. It's probably, I don't have any power.
That's right. You got your show following this show today?
Yes, sir. Arterburn Radio Transmission. We'll be live on the X at Tony Arterburn and America Unplugged channel over on Rumble.
That's great.
Do come and join us.
That's great. Well, thank you for joining us, Tony. Always great to have you on. We're going to take a quick break, folks, and we will be right back. Stay with us. Let's see. Where am I? Right here. There we go.
The seed in our homeland, boys, let it grow where all can see. meet it with our devotion, boys. Call it the Liberty Tree. It's a tall old tree and a strong old tree. And we are the sons, yes, we are the sons, the sons of liberty.
Listening to the David Knight Show.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
Well, Mark Levin, like Lindsey Graham and many others, is real excited about this. This war is exactly what he wanted. He says, U.S. soldiers that have been killed in Trump's war with Iran have died for, quote, a great cause, really. That's what he said. And he actually said, he pushed back against this idea that Trump was promising that he'd not go to war. He said, the idea that Donald Trump campaigned on allowing our enemies to build nuclear weapons and threatened to wipe us off the face of the earth, that he shouldn't intervene in that, that he shouldn't confront that, that somehow violates what MAGA stands for, is so idiotic, so stupid. And yet they push this agenda. That he's broken his campaign promises. Well, he had to do that, Levin, because everybody was on to the nonsense and the lies of Benjamin Netanyahu that he'd been telling for people for 35 years about nuclear weapons. Any day now, we're going to have nuclear weapons, right?
Not stopped. Iran could produce a nuclear weapon in a
2025.
Short time. It could be a year. It
June.
Could be within a few months.
They have the wherewithal.
2018, 7 years ago.
Knowledge. To make a bomb very quickly, if he wanted to do it.
Iran is so dangerous. Weeks away
2015.
From having the fissile material for an entire arsenal of nuclear bombs.
They're very close. They're 6 months away from being about
2012.
Having the rich uranium for an atom bomb.
Iran 14 years.
Up to have to produce 25
2006,
bombs,
20
bombs
years.
A year, 250 bombs in a decade.
Ladies and gentlemen,
1996
is running out.
Iran will be capable of producing alone, without importing anything, nuclear bombs within 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We've heard that story so many times. The Netanyahu that cried wolf over and over again. And Mark Levin is out there. So, of course, we have lost heroes. And we lost 3. Now 6. And there may be more. And the president says likely so, because it's a massive military operation. Terrible thing. They gave their lives, but they gave their lives for a great cause. My country, Israel, not America. That's why you saw that Marine, Brian McGinnis, who did that. And, of course, the senator who was instrumental in injuring him, and I'm not sure exactly the extent of it. He said he broke my hand, and other people said he broke his arm. I don't know what was done, but they got it, looked like they got it in the door and did something to it. But that senator who did it is Republican. His name is Senator Sheehy. And I saw somebody put it there. Usually you see behind a congressman or a senator, you know, they'll put in parentheses R or D, depending on which party, a dash, and then the state, right? So you have like a Republican Texas, it'd be R-TX. This guy, they put R-APAC, because that's who he represents, APAC. He not only wants to send people to die for Israel, but he'll kill you for Israel as well. Republican political strategist Tim Miller said Trump's war with Iran is a total betrayal of his own voters, an obvious betrayal of his campaign promises on Tuesday. So whether or not Mark Levin agreed with the campaign promises, that's what Trump did. And so he may believe Netanyahu that Iran is just days or weeks away from a nuclear weapon and has been in that kind of strange time warp going back 35 years or so, that they're just any moment now they're going to have a nuclear weapon. He may believe that that's true. The American people don't. And Trump promised people what he would do. He made a commitment. But, of course, he also took an oath to the Constitution. He doesn't think too much about that. Marjorie Taylor Greene reacted to Trump's remarks by sharing a video of the fictional Lord Farquaad from Shrek. Remember that? Some of you may die, but that's a sacrifice I am willing to make. And that is the way it always goes. The murder of Iranian schoolchildren cannot be whitewashed. And Mark Levin is out there talking about the wonderful precision munitions that we've got and so forth. Well, and the precious lives. He goes, those six lives were precious. What about the lives of these school children between 7 and 14 years old? Were those kids' lives precious? Oh, not to him, right? They're not even human to him. Western media is either silent or implicitly blaming Tehran for the strike that killed 168 girls. 14 teachers were also killed in the bombing, a scene all too familiar to Palestinians, grief-stricken parents, collapsing and sobbing at the sight of their daughters' murders, clutching blood-stained backpacks, pulling out school books and personal items of their slain daughters, children's desks covered in debris from the bombing, a child's shoe in the rubble, death where life had flourished. None of this is being conveyed in Western legacy media. Only ghoulish gloating over the U.S. and Israeli bombardment of Iran and the murder of the leader, Khamenei, and his young granddaughter and children as well. Iranian foreign minister posted a photo of the graves being dug and said, these are the graves being dug for more than 160 innocent young girls who were killed in the U.S.-Israel bombing of a primary school. Their bodies were torn to shreds. This is how rescue promised by Mr. Trump looks in reality. From Gaza to Manab, innocents murdered in cold blood. And as I point out in this article from RT, if the bombed school had been in Israel or Ukraine, news of it would have been plastered on the front pages of Western media for days, with widespread demands for retaliation or at least for justice and accountability. But just like the untold thousands of Palestinian children killed by Israel, as well as the half a million Iraqi children that were killed by U.S. sanctions. Remember Madeleine Albright? You know, you've had a half million kids killed with your sanctions in Iraq, starved to death and other things like that. She didn't contest the number. She just said it was worth it. That's their calculus. It's always worth it. Your life doesn't mean anything to these people. So the Iranian children's lives don't merit Western media outrage. Instead, they produce cynical reports that not only lack any semblance of empathy or sympathy, but suggest that Iran is either lying about it or Iran is to blame for the murders. So if they didn't attack us. The BBC reported, described the massacre as, quote-unquote, a reported massacre. And said Iran has blamed the U.S. and Israel for it, casting doubt on the standard for legacy media whitewashing for the U.S. and Israel's crimes. So the U.S. says, we're looking into reports of this happening. Israel says, we're not aware of this. Well, we don't care about it. But it's merely reports that blame the U.S. and Israel. I wonder why they would blame the U.S. and Israel. Would it be the bombs that they're dropping? And how Hegseth is so excited to say we are raining down death and destruction from above. Yeah, this article was written before he said that. That's even more damning. Even more damning. So the BBC then said, deep mistrust of the Iranian regime, however, makes official reports difficult for many to accept. And some Iranians directly blamed the regime for the attack. Yeah, that's not what Trump is doing in terms of his justification for this. Mark Levin keeps going back to the nuclear stuff, but of course, Trump is not going to that. He wants to push into regime change, which tells you they're going to be there for a while. The New York Times also got the memo, likewise omitting Israel from the headline and implying that Iran is lying. But when it comes to blaming Iran for retaliation, the New York Times has no problem stating whose missile strike it was. And there is no Israel says this or Israel alleges that. CNN ran the headline, a girls' elementary school was hit in Iran. Here's what we know. Notice how that works. We've talked about this. There'll be a terrorist attack, and they'll say truck kills X number of people at a German Christmas market. We know that's a Muslim attack, right? But they don't want to say a Muslim did it. They don't want to say, you know, who it was that did it. The truck did it. It's this type of thing. Somehow this was hit by a missile. A missile did it. The U.S. military's Central Command said they are looking into reports of the incident. Israel said, we're not even aware of it. They don't even care to look into it. Even if you're set aside the actual culprit of the school bombing, legacy media reports are devoid of any concern for the slaughtered children. The tone would be radically different if it was Israel, Ukraine, or American. We would see the names, the ages. We would have stories about their lives. They would be, in other words, humanized. But instead, there is a policy of dehumanization. Watch out for that. Watch out for that whenever war breaks out. You know, as they say, the first casualty of war is truth. Well, the other thing that happens is you dehumanize the other people so that you can kill them and boast about killing them, like War Pete is already doing. Iran signals prolonged war as U.S. strikes go deeper and Kurdish groups deny reports of an offensive. And so you have Congress, actually the U.S. Senate, the House hasn't done it yet, but the U.S. Senate looked at the War Powers Act, and they rejected a War Powers resolution. The purpose of that was to force Trump to either end the aggression or to seek congressional approval for military strikes on Iran. And so, again, you've got Congress abdicating their power. And, you know, we were talking about the tariff issue. What did the Supreme Court say? They said, well, they have tried to abdicate their authority on tariffs to some degree, even with the IEEPA stuff. They abdicated their authority for an economic emergency, but clearly this is our trade deficit is not an economic emergency. I mean, if you want an economic emergency, take a look at our budget deficit. But the trade deficit is nothing that is unusual at all. Been that way for quite some time. And they said this is a major policy, a major question act. And so the Supreme Court has said in the past that Congress, although they can abdicate their authority and pass these things on to the bureaucratic branch underneath the executive, they can't do it on a major question. And certainly, war is a major question. They shouldn't be able to delegate this to the president. Shame on them for not doing their job, but the Supreme Court should tell them that they can't do that either. But the Senate did not want to get into this fight.
The yeas are 47, the nays are 53. The motion to discharge is not approved.
There you go, 47-53. So what happened was you lost one Republican on that in terms of Rand Paul voted to have the Congress do its job constitutionally. And then you had Fetterman, who, without it being along partisan lines, you had Rand Paul voted with the Democrats to enforce the Constitution. Fetterman moved with the Republicans to make sure that they're just going to have war for Israel. So that's how that worked out. And, of course, Thomas Massey had something to say about this, and it's coming up for vote in the House.
Mr. Speaker, James Madison wrote to Thomas Jefferson in 1789, the Constitution supposes what the history of all governments demonstrates, that the executive branch of power is the most interested in war and most prone to it. It has accordingly, with studied care, vested the question of war in the legislature. The Constitution is clear. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11 of our Constitution provides Congress initiatory powers of war. Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1 of our Constitution gives the president operational powers of war to wage that war. Even if this body were to pretend that the 1973 War Powers Resolution supersedes the clear language of the Constitution, the president still has not met the conditions required by that law itself. The 1973 War Powers Resolution states plainly that the president may only introduce U.S. armed forces into hostilities pursuant to three conditions. Either one, declaration of war, two, specific statutory authorization, or three, a national emergency created by an attack upon the United States. None of those conditions exist today. Iran has not attacked the United States, Congress has not declared war, and Congress has not granted specific statutory authorization. Beyond the constitutional question, here lies an even more important one. Why are we going to war with Iran? We owe our military service members a clear mission. And American families in my district want to know how this is going to help them pay for groceries. How does this make them any safer in their schools or in their neighborhoods? How does this help them pay for housing? Have we learned nothing from the laundry list of wars and regime change experiments we sparked across the Middle East that have racked up a total of at least $8 trillion of debt in Iraq, Libya, Syria, Afghanistan? A sustained war with Iran will not stabilize the region. It's already ignited the region. It will radicalize new generations of terrorists, and it will send more swarms of refugees into Europe and the United States. Iran is not Venezuela. The Ayatollah was not a president. He was a religious leader from a region notorious for radical Islamists. And the United States and Israel turned him into a martyr. And in the process of doing so, we've already expended billions of dollars, and more solemnly, six American families must now lay to rest their sons and daughters. And for what? This administration can't even give us a straight answer as to why we launched this preemptive war. The president says we had to strike first because an Iranian strike was imminent. Meanwhile, the Department of Defense conceded there was no evidence of an imminent Iranian strike. Some told us this war was about nuclear weapons, but 6 months ago, we were assured our last strike on Iran decimated their nuclear program. So which is it? I think the most candid answer came from the Secretary of State, who told the press that Israel forced our hand and dragged us into this war. Again. And that truth is the very reason why it is Congress that must decide war. If American lives are to be risked and American blood is to be shed, that decision must be debated and voted on by the representatives of the American people. And that debate is meant to be arduous. And that vote is meant to be hard. I have a theory. I think my colleagues don't want to go on record because we have a terrible track record of meddling in the Middle East. They don't want their name associated with this when it doesn't turn out well. But Congress cannot be bothered with its constitutional duty because for many in this chamber, it's easier to simply allow someone else's sons and daughters to be sent to combat without their vote. And to be clear, we aren't even here to declare war today. All we're voting on is a war powers resolution to reassert the Constitution that Congress must decide questions of war. And if Congress wants war, then the Speaker should hold a vote to declare it. Some say Congress authorizes war when we pay for it, when we pass the budget bill. Here's the problem. We haven't taken on the hard work of defining the mission for our sons and daughters who are going to fight. That's not in the budget bill. It never is. And to the men and women who are engaged in combat, I sincerely thank you, and I pray for your safety. It is for you that I wrote this resolution. It is for you that all of us are here on this floor working so hard to force this vote so that you will have a clear mission that you deserve, so that you will know when you achieve it, you can come home.
Fortunately, he's wasted in a corrupt institution like the U.S. House. He needs to be president. And so why are we doing this? Well, of course, we know why this is happening, and we know what the objective is. The objective is to fully and finally destroy Iran. That is the fool's errand that Netanyahu has co-opted us on. He asked the White House, if the Trump administration is secretly talking with Iran about a ceasefire after Israeli intelligence suspected possible communications. So think about this. You've got the, as always, you've got the Israeli intelligence spying on us and then questioning the president. How dare you talk to them? I've got intelligence. We've been watching you. You better not talk to them. The White House denied any talks and said the U.S. has ignored messages that were sent by Iran through regional intermediaries, said Axios. So there we go. Let's no, Netanyahu. Bibi, I'll do whatever you tell me. Please, I haven't betrayed you. It's pathetic. It really is pathetic. Meanwhile, Turkey says a ballistic missile fired by Iran was destroyed by NATO. A lot of people are saying, well, is this going to be the thing that's going to draw NATO in? That's not going to help. I mean, it would widen the war, but it would not really help. I mean, the U.S. is, for all practical purposes, NATO, beginning and end. Recall that in 2002, Bush's then Defense Secretary Rumsfeld declared of impending Iraqi operations. Rumsfeld said, 5 days or 5 weeks or 5 months, but it certainly isn't going to last any longer than that. It won't be World War III, he said. Well, that was the only thing that he got right. Hegseth, for the first time on Wednesday, suggested 8 weeks. Again, they've already doubled it. They were saying 4 to 5 weeks. Now they're saying 8 weeks. Well, U.S. losses stand at least 6 service members killed, but hey, for Mark Levin, it was worth it. With several critically wounded, CENTCOM has yet to issue a new Wednesday casualty update. You can't trust any of these numbers when they come out with it. War Pete says that war with Iran could last up to 8 weeks. U.S. and Israel expect to achieve uncontested airspace over the country in under a week and to unleash, as War Pete says, death and destruction from the sky all day long. All day long. Yeah, that's what they're very excited about. Again, sorry, I hit the wrong button here. But yeah, raining death and destruction down from the sky all day long. As a matter of fact, Mike Johnson, you know, we look at what a justified war is. It's when somebody else attacks you. And we, as we've talked about this many times, maneuvering the other people into attacking in a passive aggressive way. That has been the pattern we've seen over and over again. Either that or a false flag attack that, it may not even be a real attack. It could be something like the Gulf of Tonkin. But Mike Johnson had the audacity to talk about American embassies being attacked as if Iran had initiated that.
Iran has attacked 3 of our U.S. embassies in the last couple of days. Okay, those are
what have you attacked?
Territories of the U.S. They have declared war on us. I don't believe in the semantics. We've talked about the language this morning. We're not at war right now. We're 4 days in to a very specific, clear mission, an operation, Operation Epic Fury, which has 2 components, as you know, that we have articulated over and over. The president has, the commander of the Joint Chiefs, everybody has explained.
Isn't that amazing that you can have somebody that could be that much of a liar? Just look at you and lie in your face. And these people standing behind him, you got Tom Emmer and Steve Scalise standing behind him. I would never stand behind that liar. I would never want to be associated with him in any way whatsoever. Well, they declared war on us. They attacked our embassies. That's American sovereign territory. Well, you know, Iran is sovereign territory for Iranians, and you're killing school children with your precision bombing. But we shouldn't pay any attention to that. We shouldn't complain about that as well. And so how is this all working out for us? Well, there was a base that was hit, and it's a pretty significant hit, and this is the type of thing that can always go wrong in a war.
Has struck Al Udeid Air Base, as I said, the biggest American base in the region. We don't know much more. No casualties reported as of yet. Again, we don't know what we don't know, but we do know they are saying it was a ballistic missile. It's obviously a significant development, and as that is coming in, we are learning that the CIA is also working to trigger some sort of an uprising inside of Iran. Now, this is a major and potentially explosive development in the war. So let me tell you what we know here with these breaking details. Multiple people familiar with the plan are telling CNN that the Trump administration is working to arm Kurdish forces, who they then expect to take part in a...
Yeah, so we want to widen the war. We're going to create a civil war there in Iran, because that is what American foreign policy is always about. You know, we have known knowns, we have known unknowns, we have unknown unknowns, and we have the people in the Trump administration don't know nothing, right? don't know nothing about history. Don't know much about biology. The New York Times is detailing, with satellite and open source image analysis, that the Pentagon's sophisticated radar and comm infrastructure around the Persian Gulf is being steadily reduced and decimated by Iran. They write, Iranian strikes conducted over the weekend and on Monday damaged structures that are part of our near communication radar system on at least 7 U.S. military sites across the Middle East. They're not just attacking embassies. They're attacking these communication sites. Visuals show damage on or close to mechanisms used to track incoming ballistic missiles, satellite dishes, and radio domes, which are weatherproof covers that protect sensitive equipment used by forces to communicate over long distances. U.S. military communications of infrastructure is highly classified, making it difficult to determine which exact systems may have been affected. But the targeted locations appear to indicate that Iran was aiming to disrupt the U.S. military's ability to communicate and coordinate. Iran has attacked the U.S. military's communication capacity as recently as last June, when it struck a Qatari base, and it hit again over the weekend. Strikes potentially affecting these systems also occurred on military facilities in Bahrain, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE. And then there was a longer post on social media going into more detail about this. The New York Times, which, as this person points out, this is not a Telegram channel. It's not a Russian state broadcaster, but they published satellite imagery confirming what Iran said it was doing while Washington was busy telling you that it wasn't working. Every major U.S. base across the Gulf systematically and methodically attacked. Bahrain 5th Fleet Headquarters, the nerve center of American naval power in the region, the base in Qatar that they were just talking about on Saudi Arabia, already missing its $1.1 billion radar system. And then another camp in Kuwait. Then Ali al-Salem, Prince Sultan in Saudi Arabia. The UAE facilities, SATCOM terminals destroyed, radomes cracked open, satellite dishes gone, missile tracking infrastructure, the radar systems that coordinate every Patriot and every THAAD battery in theater. These were targeted with what the imagery confirms was not luck, but was architecture. Iran didn't just strike the U.S. bases. It mapped the communication and coordination layer that makes American missile defense function as a unified system, and then it peeled it apart, base by base. This is not retaliation, but doctrine. 30 years of studying exactly how the American military machine sees, communicates, and coordinates, and then when the moment came, going straight for the eyes. The interceptors are blind. The magazines are depleted. The Navy can't guarantee escorts in the Strait. Raytheon is being summoned to emergency meetings. South Korea is sitting exposed. And the New York Times just put the satellite pictures on the front page. Washington built the most expensive military architecture, and it's highly centralized, folks. That's the other key part of this. Highly centralized and expensive military architecture in human history. Iran just showed you the blueprint for how to dismantle it. This is not going according to plan, assuming that there was a plan, which I'm not convinced that there was. They continue by saying that the radar that was destroyed was not just a target, but the nervous system of every one of these Patriot batteries and every THAAD launcher, every layered air defense architecture that the U.S. has spent 4 decades and several $1 trillion constructing across the Gulf. Every interceptor and theater just went partially blind. the backbone of American missile defense, and the most fortified U.S. base in the Middle East, taken out by a single Iranian strike while they were busy stripping South Korea's defenses, summoning Raytheon to the White House and requesting $50 billion in emergency funds to restock magazines that were already hollow before the war began. The air defense shortage is worse than most imagined. And by the way, with Trump blaming Biden for this, saying, well, he didn't leave us with enough missiles or anything, he's been president for a year. If he was going to go to war, he didn't plan for it, and he didn't produce the material that he needed for it. Qatar claims to have intercepted 101 missiles. They also claim that two of them got through. So they got 101 out of 103. One of them hit the only target that mattered. This is asymmetric warfare distilled to its purest form. Iran has succeeded once. The U.S. has to be perfect every time, and of course they weren't. And now the U.S. Navy, the force that Trump promised would escort Gulf shipping through the strait, has announced that it cannot provide escorts in the Strait of Hormuz. No escorts, no timeline. But even if they do, they're setting ducks for Iran's coastal defense forces. No Iranian Navy presence is required. They're very excited that whatever Iran had of a Navy, and I can't imagine it was much of anything, they said they had like 10 ships or something. They're all gone now. We destroyed all of them. So what? That really doesn't matter. It's the missiles and the drones that matter. The petrodollar runs through the choke point that the U.S. can no longer credibly protect, defended by interceptor systems that are now operating without their primary radar, restocked by a Raytheon production line that can only make 37 THAAD interceptors a year. 3,200 ships are sitting idle. European gas is up by 50% and climbing fast. A global recession is no longer a forecast. It's a Wednesday. The Gulf monarchs who rented their soul to Washington are now watching their ports burn and their pipelines get threatened. And the Navy says that it needs more time. Well, I don't revel in seeing this kind of destruction, but certainly because it disturbs me to see Hegseth cheering the destruction of anybody. I don't want to see war. You know, it's the sort of thing when you look at the reality of it. You know, it's one thing to have some kind of an abstraction that you lie to yourself and you lie to other people. It's what they do all the time with abortion. By the way, you know, Planned Parenthood defunded by Trump in March, and then quietly reinstated in December. Same thing with the United Nations. And, of course, with the United Nations, you had Melania went to the United Nations and was speaking about, of all things, as they are bombing and killing 160 kids, she goes to the UN and hypocritically talks about how they're going to help children in conflict.
The provisional agenda for this meeting is maintenance of international peace and security, children, technology, and education in conflict. The agenda is adopted.
Yeah, we've got children in conflict everywhere. And so the question is, and somebody put up a clip of Ghislaine Maxwell talking to the UN as well. It's like, how do these two Epstein girls, how do they get to the point where they get to talk to the UN? That's a rhetorical question, right? Supposedly, she knows six languages. She can't even speak English well. She had to have a translator when she went to France and when she went to Italy. All of this stuff, folks, is a lie. Trump cuts the funding of the UN and then he reinstates the funding to the UN. His wife gets to chair the Security Council meeting. How does that work out? But just remember, don't forget, Trump is against the UN. He's against the globalist. He's against the World Economic Forum, even though they keep inviting him to speak and they keep giving him standing ovations when he does. Yeah, just tell yourself that he's the guy that you needed. He's your savior. He's going to do all that. He is as adamantly opposed to you as he could be, if you're an American. is adamantly opposed to America First. Everything that he does is against our interests. When will people wake up? So the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, said satellite imagery showed no damage to facilities containing nuclear material in Iran, therefore no radiological release risk at this time. You hear that, Mark Levin? You whining little traitor. Yeah, it was never about the nuclear stuff. Never about it. He keeps throwing that out just like Benjamin Netanyahu. The U.S. Joint Chiefs announced in a Pentagon briefing with Hegseth that they stand ready to strike deeper into Iranian territory and that forces are shifting to there from large to more precision strikes across Iran. So as all this stuff is happening, they are trying to foment a civil war. They're talking about going deeper. They're doubling the amount of time. Oh, this isn't going to be a quagmire at all, is it? Mm-mm. Now, we're there to get rid of the nuclear weapons that Trump said he destroyed last summer. We're going back again to finish the job that he now says, I did it, but they rebuilt it all in 6 months. Because, you know, those people, I got to say, if they are so good at rebuilding this stuff, you haven't got any chance of ever stopping it anyway. So either you're lying or these people are kind of superhuman in terms of what they are going to create. Israel and the U.S. are noticeably blowing up border installations. This appears to be in preparation for a reported CIA Israel plan to back the Kurds who are being prodded to foment civil war in Iran. Some Democrat lawmakers blasted Trump's justification for the strikes, warning the U.S. risked sliding into a ground invasion and an open-ended engagement with no end in sight. Israel continues to get hit hard, an Iranian ballistic missiles, some reportedly being hypersonic, continues to slip past air defenses. Israel's finance ministry estimates economic damage from the war could reach $3 billion per week. Per week. Well, let's take that out by eight, right? So $24 billion? I don't know what their budget is or their GDP, but that's a lot of money by anybody's standard. There's been widespread criticism and questions surrounding the administration's emphasis on protecting Israel. Trump just said that if your cost of living goes up because he's bombed Iran, that's worth it to make Israel safe. Just like he put Argentina ahead of American farmers. What was initially touted by Washington as an attack that would be limited is now metastasizing across multiple theaters, including Gulf energy routes, Eastern Mediterranean shipping lanes, NATO airspace, with both sides signaling that they're prepared for a long fight. Well, it's already been a long fight. The fight's been going on for 73 years. And that's the reality of what is happening here. Jeffrey Sachs says Trump is an utter disgrace to our nation. He lied to us, he points out. And he says, this is a long-term plan. This is a Mossad CIA plan. You know, the Epstein people. For American control of the Middle East and Israeli military hegemony in the Middle East that's been underway since 1996. This is madness, and it is a murderous delusion. And, of course, Pete Hegseth is the guy there to bring us the murder. He pointed to a series of U.S.-backed or U.S.-involved conflicts across the region from Libya to Sudan to Somalia and the ongoing crisis in Gaza as evidence of a consistent pattern aimed ultimately at confronting Iran. He said it has involved wars across the Middle East. It's left rivers of blood from Libya to Sudan, Somalia, and the genocide in Gaza. Netanyahu's goal since the mid-1990s has been the destruction of Iran. He says, Trump is an utter disgrace to our nation. An utter disgrace. He lied to us. Every word about America First, and he did exactly the opposite of what he said. Well, again, he was a lying traitor all of 2020. Just one lie after the other. He masterminded that. He funded that. And yet people made excuses for him. He's playing 4D chess. No. He's saving us from the really bad vaccine from Bill Gates. You know, this one is not bad at all. It's just going to have like some aluminum mercury. You can inject that. Can you do that for Trump, right? It's sugar water. Sugar water. The U.S. doesn't negotiate. It cheats. Now they kill you because if you negotiate, it means that you're weak and stupid. This is the way criminals like Trump always think, and he is a mafia figure. That if they can come up behind you and blindside you, right, get you a sucker shot because you were dumb enough to trust them. Oh, they should have known better than to trust me. They had it coming, right? That's the way petty criminals think. And that's the way Trump thinks, because that's what he is. And that's what people like Stephen Miller and his ilk think as well. Well, if you're weak, then you don't deserve that territory. We can take it from you. And he's actually said that out loud. If you can't fight to hold on to your territory, you don't deserve it. And you deserve to have it taken from you. This is like, the rules of the asphalt jungle in New York or whatever. And this is the approach as well of Israel. Sachs connected the country's infrastructure challenges to the enormous costs of overseas military engagements. He said, why do our roads not work? Why are our bridges falling down in the United States? It's because we spend trillions of dollars in war every year. China just completed its 50,000th kilometer of fast rail because China doesn't go to war. We're in the hands of gangsters, he said. And that's exactly right. Gangsters, and I would say terrorists. We're not in the hands of a constitutional system. You know, I saw an interesting article, it was on Daily Mail, and they were talking about how Dave Smith went on a program with Piers Morgan. And I think, looking at the picture, they had like six or eight people that were arguing and debating the war on different sides. And Dave Smith was talking about how criminal this is and that we didn't have a reason to go to the war. And one of the people that was there on this Piers Morgan panel was a guy who does a podcast with Ted Cruz and goes, so you think it's not worth it to take out a major terrorist country? And he says, oh, come on. He said, and we got to stop the nuclear weapons that are there. He goes, stop trying to sell that. We've heard that so many times. Nobody buys that nuclear stuff anymore. BB has cried wolf for so many times. It just doesn't, you can come up with something better, can't you? Well, they're a terrorist state. And he said, let me tell you who the worst terrorist state in the Middle East is. It's Israel. And the worst terrorist state in the world, said Dave Smith, is the United States government. And I saw that and I told Karen, I said, the two of us are the only ones to say that out loud. He's got a bigger platform there on Piers Morgan's show to say it. Good for him for saying it. He's absolutely right. Absolutely right. When you look at the rules and how they define terrorism, that's exactly what we're talking about. Threatening people, creating fear. You think they're not fear-mongering as well as when they're war-mongering? Creating fear about terrorism threats from Iran, fear about nuclear threats from Iran. And so we got to be more like them. They might attack us first, so let's attack them before they attack us, that type of thing. And these people are ruthless, so let's be ruthless with them. Let's kill their civilian population. Let's rain death and destruction down on them, because I know that if they had the opportunity, they'd do the same thing to us. Well, they will now, right? That's the way these things are. You ramp it up. Get the Hatfields and the McCoys. They just keep stoking both sides of this. But it really is, when you're going to use violence, the threat of violence and fear to achieve your social, political goals, your geopolitical goals as well, folks, that is terrorism. Trying to use violence, actually using violence, using the threat of violence to terrorize people, to create fear. That is our foreign policy. That has been the foreign policy of the United States for a long time. We are a terrorist state. And the guy said, well, then take down that American flag behind you. He said, well, I love my country. I hate my government. That's where I am right now. I despise this government as much as I despise people like Pete Hegseth, who revel in murder. Thank you for joining us.
common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.